You're listening to JS Party, a weekly celebration of JavaScript and the web. Our 300th episode is right around the corner. Help us make it extra special and earn a free t-shirt along the way. Learn how at jsparty.fm/300. Once again, that's jsparty.fm/300. Special thanks to our partners, Fastly.com, Fly.io, and Typesense.org. Okay, hey, it's party time, y'all.
What's up, friends? I'm here with James Cowling, co-founder and CTO at Convex. They're one of our new sponsors, and they're building a full-stack platform for the TypeScript era. So, James, you have some awesome docs for Convex, and inside those docs is a document that sort of describes the entire world, the entire thinking, the framework of Convex. It's called the Zen of Convex. Can you describe that for me?
From my time building large-scale applications, I believe very strongly that there are a certain set of abstractions, primitives, and ways of solving problems that make life easy forever, and they compound in positive ways, and ways to solve problems that make life worse every day. And the things, you know, everyone can recognize these things. What makes life easy is clean abstractions, information hiding, composability. What makes life hard is conditionals, you know, checks everywhere, corner cases. Now, the Zen of Convex is about how to build applications in a way that scales for you. And in Convex specifically, one key component of that is influenced actually quite a lot by languages like Haskell. To think in terms of transactions, everything is a transaction. You don't have to think about functions interacting with each other because they're transactional. Think in terms of deterministic execution, so functions that are deterministic, so they can get replayed, they can get cached, and if any of the inputs to that function changes, we can push those functions in real time, the new results of those functions to you in real time over a WebSocket. So the Zen of Convex is about thinking about the kind of ways of building an application that are going to pay dividends to you in the long run. Now, you can use Convex and completely ignore the Zen if you want, right? You can use Convex just as a workhorse tool. We think the framework's designed in such a way that it encourages you to do things in the right way, and in a way that will scale, in a way that will make life simple for you in the long run.
Okay, if you're looking for a better type of backend, Convex is the full-stack TypeScript development platform you've been looking for. Replace your database, server functions, and glue code. Get started at convex.dev. That's convex.dev. Again, convex.dev.
Of those Breakmaster cylinder beats means, it means it's time once again for JS Party. I'm Jared, your internet friend, and I'm joined by my friend Nick Nisi. Ahoy hoy, Nick. What's up, man?
Ahoy hoy. How's it going, Jared? It's been a while.
It's going very well. Yeah, where you been, man? I've been on the pod nonstop.
I went to Disney World.
Oh, that's right. You did. You also went to Changelog and Friends.
I did, yeah. That was fun.
For those who missed it, we did a special Changelog and Friends with Nick where we talked about what we want from a web browser. So if you're only a JS Party listener and not a listener of the Changelog, what's wrong with you? Hop on over there, check out the Changelog feed, hear Nick talk about web browsers for something like 2 hours. I mean, we went deep on that episode. That was fun. We're here today not to talk about web browsers. Well, sort of, in a sense, insofar as they are the way that we access the web. We're here to talk about Effect, a really interesting project used by Johannes Schickling, the founder of Prisma, a user and a community member. He'll tell us more about his involvement with Effect. But Johannes, welcome to JS Party.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Pleasure to have you. And this is a cool new project. I mean, it's new to me. I'm not sure exactly if it's new. I think you said you've been working with it for something like 3 years. So I guess new is not the correct adjective. Is it only new to me, or is it new to a lot of people?
Yeah, I guess in JavaScript terms, it's a bit weird since like most JavaScript projects like come to exist in a very short period of time and then take off. Like a lot of people know about it. In that regard, Effect is a little bit, it's both like been around for a long time. At the same time, it's still early stage. So it's I think it's been around for more than 5 years, or it's been developed in various generations for over 5 years. But it's just getting to a point that it's ready for adoption, or getting ready for adoption. Like we're just created some docs, etc., and the community is growing, but it's still early days.
So the sign on the window says the best way to build robust apps in TypeScript. So if you're wondering why I had to have Nick here, it's because this is a TypeScript focused project and Nick is a TypeScript focused person. And so what exactly is Effect doing for people building apps with TypeScript?
So this is a question we still don't have figured out, like a precise pitch.
Okay, 5 years in, we're getting there.
We're trying to get it more honed in. So I typically explain to folks what Effect is really dependent on what their pain points with TypeScript or the web are. So I think depending on which kind of project you're working on, maybe you're building a library, maybe you're building an app or like a framework, depending on what your goal is, you might be facing different kind of pain points. And so Effect, the way how I'd right now describe Effect is kind of, for lack of better words, is a standard library that the web never really had. And so here the web is, or what I mean with the web, can be really anywhere where JavaScript runs. So this can be Node, Bun, Dano, like all of those new runtimes. It can be the browser. It can be like Cloudflare workers, like wherever JavaScript runs. And I mean, JavaScript is amazing. So many apps, so many things are built with it. But compared to other languages, compared to like modern languages like Rust or Go or Kotlin, Swift, JavaScript leaves a lot to be desired. And a lot of it is like, it kind of grew very organically. And so we had like callback hell in the past, and then we had like all sorts of different evolutions. And JavaScript was never purposefully designed for like where it is right now. And so we have kind of this organic mess. And so we don't really have a good standard library to do something, to do the hard things that you need to do in applications. So to give you a few examples of what I think is still mostly unsolved in the world of JavaScript. When I say JavaScript, I kind of mean TypeScript interchangeably here. So things like error handling, or things like concurrency handling, or serialization of data, like moving data between workers, for example, or when you want to, like, let's say you need some sort of transactional systems that you need, you manipulate some state in different parts of your app, and these changes need to happen transactionally. All of those are kind of like still left as an exercise to the app developer. And I think there's a system needed that helps in a similar way how something like React helped us to build front-end apps instead of using jQuery. I think Effect can be a set of primitives that help us to build like general business logic applications.
At what phase in the life cycle of an application, or maybe even in the size or scale of an application, I'm talking about lines of code, not scale of user base, would somebody typically want to reach for something like this, like square one, grab Effect and get going, or write your own stuff for a while and then bring it in once you start to feel some pain? Where does it fit?
That's a great question. So I think if you're already familiar with Effect, let's say you've like used it for your previous project, etc., I think you'd probably be reaching for it on day one. I think there's a similar kind of getting used to it journey and dynamic, similar to you would have probably not used TypeScript from day one if you've never used it before, but you've started reaching for TypeScript once you've experienced some pain points and it was worth it for you to get started. But then in your next project, you use it from day one. So it's similar about Effect. I would say you probably start looking for something like Effect when we're dealing like with really hairy problems building your app. Let's say there's something that's just too much, like you're, you know, it's slowing you down so much. So let's say your app really could use some better error handling, but like try catch is not the answer. You know, like you can't wrap every little function, every little block in your app like with try catch. You know your users are suffering because your app doesn't have proper error handling, and then you start looking for like, what are better ways to do error handling? Then you might be reaching for something like effect. Or let's say your app keeps failing and you don't know what is going on. So you might be looking for some observability solutions. And then when you're thinking about, how do I actually like instrument my app? Then you realize, oh, that's really hard in JavaScript. You don't have something like Tokyo tracing in JavaScript. You got to do all of that by hand. And this is also something Effect helps you with. So I think depending on what is your biggest pain point, that becomes your entry point for Effect. And once you've picked it up, then you see how many other things that it can offer. And then I think you just use it by default for every new thing.
So kind of looking at the docs, that was the main thing that kind of stuck out for me in terms of like what effect was. And I'm specifically talking about like the effect object or type that you get from the library. And like right in the documentation for that, it talks about, you know, a typical function, even in TypeScript, you can define the function and you can define the arguments that get passed to it. So you know exactly what that is and you can define exactly what gets returned from it. But there's no indication of whether that function will throw or could throw and what it might throw. And so is that what Effect is really trying to do, is to set you up to properly type and account for all of the known errors or failures that might occur within that function?
That is one aspect of it. So I think typically the way how TypeScript is designed and how most people build JavaScript app is kind of pretending that there's only the happy path, that nothing can go wrong, etc. And I think Effect is a little bit more realistic about what is happening when you build a program. And so it takes TypeScript a little bit beyond the happy path. So instead of having a promise that returns a number, you get kind of a thing that you can think of similarly like a promise. I'm oversimplifying here, but instead of thinking about something like a promise, you think about something as an effect that still has like, it has a few generics. So instead of just a promise, just having one generic, it has three. The last one is one-to-one the same as with the promise. So that's a return type, but there's two others, and there's one for the error type. So let's say you have a function that can do something. Maybe it needs to act with an HTTP endpoint, or maybe it needs to interact with database, or it needs to interact with something. Anything that can go wrong and that you want to recover from in some way or deal with in a way that is not completely useless to your users, then you want to kind of lift that up and expose it and deal with it somewhere in your program. So lifting that up into the type system is incredibly powerful, and then goes a step further. And the third type parameter is very similar to what React context is, except it's type safe. So when anything in your program, let's use that React analogy, if any of your components have somewhere in the components use context, and then it uses something from the context. In your React program, let's say you use that component somewhere, you have no clue whether that component is used or not. It might just like, maybe you need to use the default context, or it throws in with effect. Just by using something further down, it kind of bubbles up in that context type, and you see, oh, like somewhere deep down in my program, I'm using a database, or I need a file system, etc. So it kind of nicely composes what can go wrong, what does my program need, and then still what does it return.
Nick, how do you deal with these things in your hairy TypeScript programs? just hope the errors don't throw, or you know, put your head in the sand, or what are you up to?
I was laughing internally when you were talking about JavaScript developers only thinking of the happy path. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like.
Why were you laughing internally?
Because I'm so guilty of that all the time. It's like, oh, I'm making a fetch call right here, and I know that it could fail, but I don't have to do anything. Something up above me will catch if it really cares about that. And that, like, the idea of, like, from the outset, setting up a way to not only, like, describe what could go wrong, but give me, like, give me a pattern that I can put into place for actually handling that, because that's the thing that I always run into is like, oh, should I catch here?
Right.
If I catch, what am I going to do? Console.log and rethrow it or something?
Exactly.
Yeah. So like having more of a pattern and like the idea of just like putting you into that mindset of I'm going to define all of this everywhere really makes it so that you are thinking of that rather than just kind of like, you know, spraying it out there and then praying that somebody up higher in the chain is going to catch and do something with it.
Unfortunately, a lot of times who gets left with the tab is your user, right?
Exactly.
If somebody doesn't handle it, the user has to handle it.
You know what? They're not there in the PR to complain about it. So,
and I think the worst part is basically like if you go about error handling a little, if you just invest a little bit of time and you just distinguish between like, hey, something has gone wrong here, we can do something useful about it, and then just propagating that to the user and giving them a retry button, as opposed to just not doing anything about it and just giving them a 500. There's some really low-hanging fruits if we could go a little bit further. And you mentioning about like that fetch call, even worse, if you do that fetch call in a non-async function and you don't await it, since now if it fails, you might even have like an unhandled promise rejection. And so there's so many ways how it can really hurt yourself. And you don't think about that while you're like in happy programming mode when you first build out your app very blissfully.
I feel like he's really describing the way I code over here, Nick. And you're nodding along as if he very much knows our happy path programming styles. I just prefer not to think about other things but the happy path. So, I mean, I think this is great. I think that a lot of times, like you said, Nick, I guess the hesitancy or the you kind of throw up your hands and move on is just not having like a firm, what's my practice in this circumstance? Like, yes. You know, almost like underpinnings or undergirdings for you. And so something like Effect, which says, here's how we handle these circumstances. And then you're just enabled to make the decision versus not just having to make the decision of what do I do, but how do I do it, right? So that's cool. What other things does Effect bring to the table?
So I would say generally like doing the right thing should be easy, but doing the right thing in TypeScript and JavaScript is incredibly hard. The more you want to do the right thing, the harder it gets. And particularly like it gets exponentially harder. Let's say you want to do the right thing by doing good error handling. Okay, much harder. Like and literally visually, you need to it indents your entire code, etc. Let's say you do error handling and you also want to do like cancellation. So let's say you're uploading a file and you want to give people a button that says like cancel. Now doing then, and we, for example, got like the abort controller, etc. And that is just like super annoying to work with. Let's say we do both of those things. We want to do error handling and the abort controller. Now those two like kind of add up in a exponential complexity way. And this is where we're just getting started. Let's say something has gone wrong with the error handling and now we want to retry. Now we add even more complexity to this. We maybe want to instrument this with observability, since if something goes wrong, we want to know. And all of that is just where if we're embracing that complexity without any further help, it's too much to handle just by yourself. And therefore, like most JavaScript developers don't do it. And so, yeah, besides error handling, I think a form like or an aspect of error handling is retrying something, which is super cumbersome to do it in a like non-principled way. And Effect makes that literally like a one-line thing that you just add underneath your function or underneath your effect.
Does Effect have browser and server-side effects? Is it a front-end thing? Are there limitations to where and how you can use it? And then if you're shipping things to the front end, like what does this add to your packages?
Yeah, so Effect at the core, so there is like a package that's on NPM called Effect that runs everywhere. So that's completely agnostic to the runtime. It's built and structured in a way that you only kind of pay the bundle size for what you're actually using. So it has a set of modules and you just whatever you're going to use, that's going to end up in your package. And so, yeah, you have a whole bunch of different packages, and depending on your use case, you use those. And as I think by default in a small setting, I think Effect adds around like 50 kilobytes to your app. Don't quote me on that. I think we're still in the process of like shrinking that and like coming up with like a proper quotable amount. But the way how I think about this is, as I'm building a real app where I need some help to build all of those things, I might be reaching for a whole bunch of different dependencies that I no longer need. I might be reaching for something like Zod for schema encoding. I might be reaching for something like RxJS for streaming. I might be reaching for something like TS results for that error handling. And all of those combined are multiple times larger than just using Effect. And that's also another way to think about Effect. And this is what I mean by a standard library. I don't need all of those one-off libraries anymore that all have a different API design. That might be like a different maintenance life cycles, etc. Some are promise-based, some others are not. And they don't really, even though they're all JavaScript and TypeScript, they don't really all speak the same language. They don't plug well together. And this is what's so nice about using a language like Rust. Everything just fits like a glove. And this is what we're getting here with Effect and TypeScript finally as well.
There's an example on the website that I was curious, maybe we could walk through it and talk about like what it's doing or what it's adding. And it's specifically in the quick start on the React and Vite side. And it's just taking like a use state hook call where it's setting a count, but then it creates a task using use memo. And inside of that, it just calls effect.sync, which will hit set count, and then an increment call, which is just a callback that's running something called run sync. I'm trying to like understand what this is adding.
Right. So this example rather shows you, this kind of like rather a hello world. A hello world isn't very useful. It's like, it doesn't do much for you. It rather shows you, this is how I do like hello world in that esoteric program language. So arguably the examples that we have on the website and the docs right now don't do a great job yet of like selling the value of Effect, but we're actually working on a new website that will show a lot of before and after. This is how you do it, something with promises, or this is how you do something with RxJS, and this is how you do it with Effect directly. So this is rather trying to show you like, okay, this is like a minimal set, this is a minimal usage, how you can use it within React or how you can use it within Bun, etc. But this doesn't show yet how it helps you deal with complexity.
Okay, yeah. That's what I was curious about, because I wasn't sure what it was adding to the normal like use state call.
No, so, and I would actually say, I think a lot of people, like it's would be interesting to get some numbers on this. Based on my subjective perception of the JavaScript ecosystem, I think a very large percentage of JavaScript developers are probably front-end developers. And I think this is where Effect will probably see, at least initially, the least usage, since I think you get other levers that help you with like getting your job done in the front end. I think in the front end, you have probably like the way how you do styling, whether you use something like Tailwind or Radix, etc. Or you might be thinking about, should I use Solid, etc. And then where you would rather use Effect is if you do non-trivial stuff on the front end. Stuff where things can go wrong, things where you need to think about like, oh yeah, what if this goes wrong? What should we do for the user? And so a way how you can think about where you would be reaching for Effect is in your React hooks when you use the use Effect hook. You can actually see this as it can be a bit confusing, but this would be actually a good place where in the React use Effect hook, you could actually use Effect and would be I've done a meme about this on Twitter.
This is what they call self-documenting.
Yeah, but this can be a really nice boundary, since I think in the React community, the use Effect call is a bit like notorious for like some people like it, some people hate it. And typically things within whatever you're going to put into the use Effect call, it's kind of like, okay, now you're on your own. So this is where you're like, you should be very principled, like you should return something that cancels the thing that you, whatever you're triggering in there. But on there, you're left to yourself. And this is where you do the fetch call without the error handling, etc. And so this is actually the place where you can run some effects and do things in a more principled way if your app demands it. So I would say probably most people would rather reach for effect on TypeScript backends. Just this is where it kind of matters a bit, like where you have more side effecty things, where you're like you do more things that can go wrong. And the complexity on the front end is typically more on the side of like how you build your, how you compose your UIs, etc. But I think if you're building an app on the order of Slack or Discord, then your front end is actually very capable and you need to think a lot about concurrency and retries and like, and so on. And this is where something like effect is super critical.
Got it.
What would incremental adoption look like for somebody who has an existing app and would like to use effect? Oh goodness. namespace conflict. What would that look like? How would I adopt it? You know, not whole hog, but just a little bit at a time. Is that, I assume that's possible.
Yeah, totally. So I think you should go with whatever pain point is most critical to you right now. I think could be an example on the back end could be a bit easier to talk about. Let's say you build like a GraphQL endpoint, or like maybe you're using something like tRPC, etc. Let's just pick out one, however, whatever dimension you want to choose. Maybe you want to pick out a specific feature, a specific request handler. So if you think about your program in terms of like a tree, you could just pick any kind of leaf. And that leaf could be like a promise right now. And you say, hey, here's, I want to improve something here. I want to add better error handling here. Or I want to add some observability here. Then you can just take that thing. That thing could be a promise. That thing could be an async function or like a regular sync function. And you just rewrite that to be an effect, and an effect similar to a React component. You can think about like there's some analogies there in terms of mental model in that regard, that in a component you can compose other components. So, or like a async function, it's the same way, like you have an async function, you call another async function, and it's very similar about effect there. And so you just say, hey, this is how much time I have right now to refactor, and you just refactor your async function to become an effect. And then you have that boundary, and then you just call that effect from wherever that async function was called before, and you run that as a promise, and then you have your boundary there. And from there, you could say, okay, I don't want to go any further. I just want to like let it sit there and focus on another part. Or you could from there kind of let effect take over more and more of your program, and you get a lot of benefits through it, since this is where, yeah, that error handling or like observability, I think observability is also a super underrated aspect in most web development and provides so much value. This is where you get so many things then just for free.
So what is the observability story? Like what exactly does it do for you?
So I'm not sure how familiar most of the audience is with OpenTelemetry. I think in other programming ecosystems, it's quite a bit more common. I think the more you kind of go in like a Golang direction, or also with Rust, this is where it's a lot more commonplace that you instrument your code in some sort of observable way. I wish JavaScript was a little bit further ahead there. I think most apps where it's just they're just seeped in complexity. This is where you typically also see that the absolute need for something like observability. But I think the JavaScript ecosystem, you also see something like Sentry. But I'm thinking about specifically OpenTelemetry, which allows you to instrument every part of your app. And you get from your app execution, you get something that's called a trace. So you can think of like a trace that's basically like a visual print of like, hey, this is what my program has done. A trace consists of many small spans. You can, one way how you can, for example, design this is that like most kind of significant functions, you say, hey, that I execute that function, that should become a span. And then you become this, you get this nice tree diagram of your program execution. And you see, oh, like this function has taken 12 milliseconds. Oh, what has it done for 12 milliseconds? And then you can break it down to, oh, it has called these other functions and here's had written a file and writing that file took 10 milliseconds. And then you can dig in like, oh, why 10 milliseconds? And you can like look into performance. You can understand where bottlenecks are. And you also see when something goes wrong. So this is just like most apps, you kind of, let's say another aspect of the happy path programming, you're just flying blindly. You have no idea what your program is doing as long as it behaves the way how you want. But if something goes wrong, then you start adding console logs and console logs don't scale. And this is where observability comes in.
Nick, are you familiar with OpenTelemetry? Are you using it on any of your apps at work, or was this all new to you?
I am one of the people that is trying to scale console logs in a very futile way.
Oh, this is great. I like how we just call out Nick just periodically throughout this episode. It's all right. I think you, I think you're representative. I think you're representative.
I think so too. Exactly. Yeah.
And so, okay. So if you take one thing away from this conversation, of course, take away as many things as you like, but I think looking into observability tooling for JavaScript/TypeScript apps is something that all y'all should be doing, because like Joanna says, console log does not scale, and eventually you will need more and you will wish you had more. And if you have something like Effect, which helps you do these things, then you'll be happy when it comes time to debug something particularly gnarly that only happens in production, et cetera, et cetera. And you just have all the information that you need. So, okay. So that's cool.
I would also point out like one thing that it really helps you to do is with JavaScript, we have JavaScript has a bad rep that is like you build apps with JavaScript and they're slow. And now people are starting to reach for Rust. You can actually build incredibly fast applications with JavaScript. It's just harder. And I think we don't have that that kind of like tribe knowledge in the JavaScript ecosystem. And so the way how we can build fast things is by like leveraging the concurrency primitives that we have. But this is also where JavaScript kind of leaves you on your own. Like maybe the most sophisticated thing like an application developer does in regards to concurrency is promise.all. So you say like, aha, here like I do a few things sequentially. Like I like do this HTTP call and then I do this HTTP call, but I could actually do them and I could do them at the same time. So then you reach for promise.all. And then you've improved some like bottleneck maybe of your app. But this is also where the other problems manifest themselves even further. Now, what if like one of those HTTP calls goes wrong? What should we do with the other one? Should we cancel the other one? Should we let the other one still finish? So this is where like we could build faster apps, but we're so left on our own, like how to deal with those sort of situations that need to be designed, where we just say, okay, we're going to build this sequentially. It's easier to reason about, but then we have slower apps. And this is something, again, Effect helps you with, but also where observability comes in super critically, that you like visually can see, oh, those two things happen at the same time. This one thing actually takes like 10 times as long as the other thing. So you get some visibility into what's going on in your app. So all of those practices, we're like, in a way, Effect is really trying to see, hey, what have all of those other programming ecosystems that we're now kind of envious about, the, for example, the Rust ecosystem, what kind of cool tricks are they using and how can we bring them to the JavaScript ecosystem? In the same way as I think how React has very elegantly brought some of the great ideas from other language ecosystems and from other programming paradigms such as functional programming and made them mainstream, kind of undercover, turned all the front-end developers into functional programmers.
What's up, party people? I'm here with Moritz Gruber, CTO of KCV, Dev Friendly Headless CMS. One of the things I want to do as part of working here with you, Moritz, is to help the listeners of JS Party 2 narrow down their selection when looking for a headless CMS that is worth their attention. KC seems to check all the right boxes to make a dev's choice an easy one. So when you speak to devs out there looking at a headless CMS, what are the challenges they share with you?
When we speak to developers about the challenges they faced adopting a headless CMS, they always mention that there have been a steep learning curve about the system-specific languages, and they also want to bring their own front end. They want not to be limited on a templating language. They love React. They want to build in React, whatever. And with GraphQL as a single surface layer, we make that very easy, be future-proof and flexible. But that's not all. It's like most important that you can bring your old data, and that's what we solved with our bulk import export API. And then if you have a complex data structure, imagine you have an author that is related to books and the books have categories, you all of a sudden have three layers of nesting and some just stop at two. You can't go deeper than two layers of nesting in a query. And that is very frustrating. We've been there and we have people with those issues. And that's why our API solves all those edge cases, so you don't have to build bridges in the front end and compromise your architecture just because of the CMS.
Okay, KC makes it easy. Bring your own front end, React, Next, Astro, and many others. All you have to know is GraphQL to get flexible queries and rapid content retrieval. The best place to begin is their free forever tier. There's tons of free in that free forever tier. But for those who want a lifetime 50% discount, use the code JSParty. Go to kc.io. That's CAISY.io. Again, kc.io.
Nick, is this something that you would consider adopting at work? And if so, how would you go about that?
That's a great question, because I'm thinking that exact thing right now.
Well, think out loud for us.
Well, I think that I don't fully understand like the whole picture. I really like the baseline thing that Effect would give me, which is just building in and like setting a standard for how we're going to handle all of these different things that can happen within the application. So like it just brings a greater visibility to that. And if that's something that we can like codify within the code base with this, but also just like in the mindset of the developers on the team, like that this is something that we have to handle. And we like, it's just a baseline thing that we have to do rather than assuming the happy path. That's a net win, but I'm trying to understand like a bit more of what it can do, and kind of looking at the website for it again. You know, it looks like we already talked about like concurrency with it, but also it looks like, is there like composability with these things? Like I'm specifically looking at the pipe, I think, the pipelines.
Right. So, I mean, composability is not a feature as such. I think it's rather like a attribute that like your overall your system has or it doesn't have. Mm-hmm. And I would say composability is kind of like the ultimate goal that we're all chasing about. Like we're as developers, we can like dream about like, oh, there's like this better abstraction and everything will be better with it. And I think what we're aiming to solve there with better abstractions is composability. And I think the best, how we got closest to composability and the systems we're building, I think is with React. And just think about the magnitude of like improvement that React has unleashed on the world. Like before, there was jQuery and jQuery plugins, etc. Sure, that like it, there was an ecosystem, but they didn't really like fit nicely together. And with React, we have React components, so you can just install one from npm and you can add it to your app. And you got a fair bit of functionality and UI, and like you made your app composable. We don't really have that for kind of like the complement to Vue programming. So we don't really have that in, let's say, in the backend. Sure, we have packages from npm, etc., but if they're the more sophisticated they get, the more they try to do, the less they won't just work in your context. So typically, the more sophisticated your requirements are, the more you gotta like handle everything by yourself. And so I think that's just a testament that we don't really have composable primitives. We don't really have a foundation that we could say like, hey, that thing does what I want, and I just add it to my app. There's like all of those different like styles, how something is written in, and then it just doesn't work inside of your app. And yeah, bringing composability into an ecosystem, I think, is kind of an ultimate goal. And this is what has got me really interested about looking into Effect and what is so mind-blowing to me, because I haven't seen it anywhere else.
Are you sold, Nick? Are you in?
I definitely want to dig deeper, I think, and look at it more. Because it, like I said, I think it just helps to codify some things that we overlook. And I like that a lot.
So regardless of Effect specifically, let's go a little bit meta, because I'm interested in adoption practices. And I'm curious, inside of your work, if you decided this was a good direction for us or for me or for your team or whatever, like, what would you do? How would you go about it? Are you in a position where you could just pull it into the package JSON and go? Or would you have to convince somebody that this is a good idea? How does it work at your work?
I'm at a bit of the perfect place to try something like this, I guess, because we're pretty deep into a completely greenfield like rewrite of a legacy Angular JS app. And, you know, we're rewriting it in React with TypeScript. And it's very much like we're getting towards the end of it, but there's still only like two devs kind of going full steam on it right now. And the thing that we're really looking at right now is we kind of like, you know, we're at like 90% completion. And like one of the big focuses for me is on that hardening piece. Like, okay, we're going to have to bring in other developers into this. Let's go back and look at the practices that we put into place, because, you know, 3 months ago when we started this, these were what we thought were the best practices. Did they actually play out properly? And are we actually like running into problems? Like, you know, when it comes to error handling and things like that specifically, one thing that we really like went full-fledged on for like error handling and things like that are suspense and suspense boundaries within React. But it's still pretty much like mostly, you know, happy path. Like, here's a fetch call, here's a use query call, no error handling associated with that. It'll get caught by a suspense boundary at some point and then show some generic error. But it's not very like specific to, you know, this specific thing failed. And we don't really account for things like, you know, making several requests and only one of them fails. Like, what do we do there? Right now, we just show the suspense boundary and don't really retry things. So like, I think that it's interesting. And like, that is the approach that I would take for like trying to adopt this into that code base, is like, how is this going to make that like that specific piece better? Because yeah, it's really hand wavy right now. And what is that going to mean, you know, when we bring in more developers onto the project, when it's more than just myself and one other person? Like, are we setting up the best practices and patterns to have that carried on?
That makes a lot of sense. And I think there's also an interesting double-edged sword there. Like, learning Effect has a good learning curve. Mm-hmm. Like, it took me a certain period of time to pick it up. And I learned it when there weren't like any docs. So I had the luxury of like learning directly from the author. And like, I used that also to contribute back some ideas how to possibly simplify things. But there is still a learning curve. It's already getting a lot better. And there are some really great resources already, the docs and also some YouTube videos where the community is just creating a lot of those resources. But learning it is an investment, but I think it's paying off big time. But you gotta bring your team also on board to be willing and to say, yes, this is how we're gonna do it. And I think that's gonna take a little bit of time, that you have like, maybe you have just hired a new engineer and that the likelihood of that engineer says like, oh, of course I've used Effect at my previous company, that's going to take a little bit of time until that is a given, similar to how that's a given with React right now.
Yeah.
But I think you probably find the people who are willing to take that step are probably the people who just acknowledge like, hey, we're no longer in happy land mode. Like we have like all sorts of stuff, just like we can't deal with that complexity any longer. We need some help. And I think in React is actually one of the better places now in the JavaScript ecosystem. I think in the backend there, we don't have any suspense boundary, etc. If stuff goes wrong, it just goes wrong.
Yep.
And there's like, it's just a 500 in the face of the user.
Now, one thing that, as you were saying that and like talking about, you know, the complexities of like it's a big investment into learning all of this. One foray into something like that we've done in the past to kind of handle state management. And my question is, I'm curious, like how this relates to Effect or not, or like, you know, could they live together or would they kind of, do they serve separate purposes? And that is like, we really took to adopting state machines in XState for some complex state management within one of our apps. And I'm curious, like, is that solving some of the similar problems in kind of a different way by giving you those finite states to have to handle? Or could those two projects complement each other?
Right. So we're actually in close contact with David, who's the creator of XState. And we want to figure out like a good integration story between Effect and XState. And in fact, we're going to have David over at the first Effect conference in Vienna next February, where we hopefully get to announce exactly that.
Nice.
So I hope that we have a good answer for that soon. And like the way how I think about the responsibilities of how they could work together is XState is all about the state machine part. It's like that, you know, like, hey, I'm currently in this state, and you get a visual representation for that. You get like types inferred for that, etc. All of that, this is where XState shines. Where XState, and similar to React, kind of like leaves things up as an exercise to the developer, is like the state transition. Like now you do the, like in React where you say use effect, or in XState when you perform the effect. Now this is like still up to you. There you might still do the fetch, and this is where you're still on your own with the error handling, with the retrying, with doing things concurrently, or like getting some observability insights into what's happening. And this is where they can play really nicely together.
Vienna in February, Nick, sounds like a decent place for a remote JS party, perhaps. That sounds like
absolutely.
Tell us more about this conf.
Yeah, we have a really interesting set of speakers already confirmed. So I've mentioned we have David from XState over. We have Guillermo Rauch from Vercel giving a talk as well. We have a lot of folks from the Effect community who are going to present the various projects they're working on with Effect. We have some other well-known people from the TypeScript community who are like taking their first steps with Effect and share their experience. So yeah, and what's exciting to me is like those are all of those folks have in common. Those are like some of the most experienced engineers I've ever met in the web ecosystem, and they all seem to be kind of interested in Effect, and where great ideas come together.
Very cool. Well, the website is effect.website. There's a new website that I assume will live at the same website soon. Johannes gave us a little sneak peek. They are working on updating the docs, updating the examples, making it more useful, more approachable. I think that's what this project needs because it looks very powerful. And as you said, there is a learning curve, and yet probably worth that learning curve for folks who need this. So the more people we can get over the learning curve into using it and making their apps more robust, more best practiced, more observable, more error handled, Nick, the better, right? So anything else, Johannes, about the project that you want to make sure we cover before we call the show?
No, I'm super happy that I got to share like some of my experience and thoughts on Effect. Like I've been, as you mentioned initially, I've been using it for the last 2.5 years, and the projects and products I've built over that time, I could have not have built them without Effect. I think this is kind of like the highest praise I can give to a project if it really like provides a lot of value. And now it's just up to making it more accessible, easier to use, and help people get to use it. So if you're into type safety, and if you feel like there's too much complexity in your app and you need some better ways to tame it, feel free to check out the website, join our Discord. We have a really lively and helpful Discord community where you typically get an answer in like around about 30 minutes. And we're going to help you adopt Effect successfully.
Yeah, sounds like you have too great Effect. I had to, I'm sorry.
I was planning on dropping a Rex in Effect joke at some point, but I forgot. So here it is, Rex in Effect. Look it up, kids. All I wanna do is zoom, 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 and a boom, boom. On behalf of Nick Nisi, I'm Jared. This is JS Party, and we will talk to y'all on the next one. Next up on the pod, Nick and I are joined by the winners of the first ever React Jam. React Jam, if you haven't heard, is an online event where React developers come together to create games in 10 days. We talk about the game they built, how they won it all, and what they're building for React Jam Fall 2023, which just kicked off today. Thanks once again to our partners. Check them out, Fastly.com, Fly.io, and TypeSense.org. If you dig the show, share it with a friend. And if you really dig it, leave us a 5-star review. Social proof for the win, right? That's all for me, but stay tuned. We'll throw another party for you next week.